Good day, good night, and welcome to World Cup Today. The knockout stage is upon us, and France is moving on. France have stepped aside the trap of Argentina, Dwayne, and this was quite a cracker of a game to start the knockout stage. First of all, Dwayne, good morning.
Good morning. It certainly was. It was a beautiful day to watch, to sit and watch football all day in dark, dingy bars, I thought. So, you know, that's not to enjoy a heat that we rarely get in this country, and just instead watch good football.
Yes. If you don't know, it's like 42 degrees Celsius, 120 degrees Fahrenheit in the northeast of America, North America, right now, where I am in Montreal, where Dwayne is in Toronto. We are in the air-conditioned world, and that is a positive, because if you're outdoors, if you're playing outdoors, drink some water, and make sure you find a spot of shade to cool down a bit. But speaking of cool down, Mbappe is not cooling down, Dwayne. And I have to say, I want to start the show there. 39 kilometers an hour. That was the peak of his run when he was running on that play that led to the first goal, the penalty. You know what is the average of Usain Bolt over 100 meters, Dwayne?
You tell me. I've heard this before, but off the top of my head, I do not.
38. So Mbappe, over a longer run, had a higher average of run than Usain Bolt. That's how fast Kylian Mbappe was. No wonder Mascherano and the defender behind him couldn't do nothing about it.
Well, that's work on his start time, and we might see him in Tokyo. Has France ever had the 100-meter champion? I don't know.
They were close. They were close a few times, but no, they never had one. So maybe Andre Degrasse versus Kylian Mbappe, Tokyo 2020.
There you go. There you go. And we'll be talking a lot about that in the days ahead in our run-up to the Tokyo Olympics on the Five Rings podcast. How's that for a segue into a promotion, Kevin?
That's a good plug. And speaking of plug, welcome to World Cup Today. This show is brought to you by sportsinspired.ca. Get your clothing inspired by greatness at sportsinspired.ca. But that game, that run, first of all, congratulations to France. Moving on, we'll talk about Portugal and Uruguay a little later on. What to say about this game? First of all, France looked like France for the first time in the tournament.
Yeah, well, yeah, and Argentina, maybe they might actually look like themselves too, and for all their strengths and all their flaws. I mean, they did score three goals in this game and did have a lead 2-1 in the second half, but certainly France, particularly Mbappe, were, you know, showing that little bit of legendary superstar that we've always sort of thought was there, and why some of the biggest clubs in the world are very much chasing him down, and we all expect him to land in, you know, amongst the greatest very soon. You know, it showed all that on display, and it was easily right up there with Spain-Portugal as the most entertaining game of this tournament so far. I still might give it to the Spain-Portugal game because I think that had, although, you know what, they equally had a lot of intrigue, and it's kind of a fool's errand to pick between the two of them. This one had more stakes, obviously, and, you know, Messi going out and all of that. Wow. So it was a great game that way, and is it a marker down for France in terms of making them once again the favorite, I would say, based on the way that this tournament has played out and their draw? Maybe it does. As I said, the three goals against is a bit of a, but yeah. Argentina finally did get itself going pretty well going forward in that game. And it's an incredible offensively talented team, Argentina. That wasn't their problem.
What I realize in this game, too, is we've been talking about this for a long time, is the unorganization of Argentina versus the organization of France in that game. Yes, France was not as tight in the back late in the game, and they got the third goal at the 92nd minute that made for a squeaky bum 2 minutes to finish the game for France. But when you look at how Argentina was set up again differently than the game before, differently than the game before, differently than the other game before, differently than the last 12 games before. So Argentina, no consistency whatsoever, and it seems like this cost them the match. It cost them the World Cup, because the moments where they got scored on, there's a penalty, but the penalty was created by that amazing run for the ages, like 10 kilometers an hour faster than Maradona in 86. That's how fast Kylian Mbappe was on that day, on that moment. And that really illustrates for me where Argentina were not a team. they were, of course, a lot of chaos. We heard about the rumors of Muni. Those were overly played for sure. But look at where Messi was. Messi was not necessarily put in the place where Messi could shine. And this entire team seems like it was not made to be a team. And we've seen yesterday two great players being booted out of the World Cup because they face two better teams.
Yeah, perhaps, for sure. And we'll talk, obviously, about Portugal in a minute. Messi was kind of isolated from that game. And, you know, his secondary scorers did actually step up on the day. But, you know, Di Maria with the wonder goal, beautiful curling goal there. Aguero, who does what Aguero does, scores late, scores with his pace and his ability to find a way. He is a fighter that way. And, you know, once when Aguero scored that goal, I was like, where have I seen this movie before? Oh, yeah, it was a wonderful movie.
Where's Deco? That's what I was thinking. Where's Deco? But anyways.
Yes, he was playing the role of Deco, but he couldn't find another Aguero. But we did have that last play down there. I think the last 4 minutes of that game really did epitomize Argentina's whole tournament in a lot of ways, because there was both the positive with Aguero scoring and the negative with that little brawl that they have there at the end.
Otamendi?
Cards getting for, yeah.
Pogba's like a, getting, just, it's radio here, so let me just explain for our listeners if they haven't seen this moment we talk about. Pogba gets fouled. He falls down. Otamendi, the ball is close to Pogba's face. Otamendi takes like three steps of running and then boots the ball so close that he feels like he's going to hit Pogba. He got himself a yellow. That should have been a red. But yeah, Otamendi, you know, that Latin blood, Argentina's Latin blood was boiling late in that game.
Yeah, to be diplomatic about it, you could say that maybe he was just desperately trying to clear the ball up the pitch. But at the same time, you have to be a little – if you want to take that very diplomatic view, then you need to criticize him for not being aware of his surroundings enough, because basically that play wasted 90 seconds. They did not get all of those 90 seconds back. I mean, and once it happens and, okay, people are upset, get the hell out of there, because you're in the World Cup. You have 2 minutes to score a goal. You don't want to waste 90 seconds of it shoving someone. No, you want to get the ball up into the other box. That's what should have been in their mind, not whatever the hell was in their mind. And I think that illustrates just how little bit of motivation, how little control, how little focus there was in that team, and it was just really, it really truly was just a collection of all-stars, and a collection of all-stars that are now pretty much done.
Yeah.
You know, Messi will be 35, Aguero will be 34, Di Maria will be 34 in the next World Cup. Those are three.
Mascherano will be 40. Mascherano will be back for sure.
So we're there. I mean, you know, I can foresee Messi being involved in Argentina's next World Cup if he decides to stay with the program. He is good enough that he will play long enough, and certainly at 35 he'll still have a role to play, but it won't be the role that he's had for the last few World Cups. He would be, you know, the guy coming in probably off the bench at that point, and that's why this has seemed so much like the final moment for them. But you know, that's a topic for the next 4 years. The topic for right now is that this was a team that just never became fully what it could have been. And part of that, as I said earlier on this World Cup, was just the makeup of the team, too. They just weren't that strong at the back. And certainly in goal, we saw it as well. So.
Like Griezmann almost scored off one of the worst blunders I've seen ever, where it's not even the goalkeeper's fault, but the defender trying to give to the goalkeeper, but he missed him by, what, 3 feet? To the left, so Griezmann gets the ball. This could have been a penalty too, because both the goalkeeper and the defender were tugging on Griezmann's shirt. But I think you're right in saying this game epitomizes for me Argentina in the 2018 World Cup. Why? Because they left it just a little too late.
Yeah, but they were immensely entertaining in how chaotic they were too. So that was part of Argentina
true.
Too. Say what you want about them, they've been entertaining during this 3 week period, and we will remember this World Cup a little. We always remember the World Cup for the great performances, but also for the team that you go WTF. And in this World Cup, you know, Germany bailing out in Argentina's chaos will be equally remembered for whoever ends up in the confetti at the end of it. But yeah, it's too bad when you're talking about Messi and his legacy and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, let's just quickly go there. Messi's legacy is and untouched. No more.
It's like, yeah, you're right.
It's fine. I mean, okay. He's going to be remembered for the Champions Leagues and the goals and the Barca titles, not his international performances. And what I think Messi will end up doing if he decides to stick with this, and that is a question because the Argentina Federation is chaotic.
Yeah, it's a tire fire.
That he doesn't want a Copa America either, and so he does have one more shot, kind of legit shot at that in a 18 months time. And I suspect that will be the one that he will go out on. And if he wins that, for sure. And Argentina always has a chance to win Copa America, so yeah. That might be the focus moving forward.
That could be very interesting. But just to go back on Messi for a second again, Dwayne. His legacy, his legacy with Argentina is way different than his legacy with Barcelona. And I'm a big believer in demeanor, right? Demeanor is one of the indicator of behavior when you look at a player play. Messi with Barcelona, carefree, fluid, happy, a little smiley, ready, and not getting the moment let to him. And now, when you look at Messi with Argentina, nervy, stress, the weight of a country on his shoulder, not feeling that he has the teammate to be able to help him carry this through. Let's not forget, Argentina was at the World Cup for one reason only. It took 3 goals against Ecuador to qualify for the World Cup in their last possible chance in the qualification round.
If Lionel Messi was born in was Spanish, not Argentine, and we think a lot of people, I think, kind of think of him in Spain's vein because of his history with Barcelona. We're not talking about his World Cup legacy because he has more supports around him on that team, and Spain's probably won a couple World Cups by now with him. So that's that. And because look at the Spanish national team and a massive amount of Barcelona influence on it, and you just don't worry about it. So you can't really blame him that much for failing to get this done. I made the comparison early on in this World Cup or in the beginning to the hockey player that just ended his drought when he was surrounded by a team that couldn't get it done before. But, is the Washington Capitals the same as the Spanish or as the Argentine national team and Ovechkin and Messi? These great players shouldn't have to. Championship shouldn't be the measure of a great player when it comes to their performance in a team game, necessarily. It should be a very small factor in it, in my mind. So when you're talking about Messi's legacy, let's not get bogged down. And besides, he's won team titles. He's won them on the club side, just not the international side.
Yeah, and we all seen him as well be instrumental and influential in both Argentina's success. Let's not forget, they made it to the final of the World Cup in 2014, and that was pretty much due to Messi, even though he hadn't scored a goal in the knockout stage in 2014 still. He still hasn't scored a goal in knockout stage, which is the same for Cristiano Ronaldo, which tells you a lot as well about the World Cup, where tactics in the knockout stage are almost more important than talent. I'm not saying they are more, but they're getting up there because look at France. They nullified Messi. Look at 2014. Messi was not being able to score even in the knockout stage. It was his compatriots, Di Maria in the round of 16, and then you had the Aguero and the rest of the team helping him a lot more than this year. But they still made it to the final in 2014. Let's not forget that. Messi carried Argentina to the final in 2014, and that alone, for me, is an accomplishment too, because 1 out of 11 does not have the same influence as, example, a LeBron James with 4 other players, and we forget that sometimes. Oh, he's so good. That guy's so good. Yeah, you don't need one good guy. You need like 3 or 4, and the rest of the guys need to be close to them, and then you actually have a shot.
Precisely. Look, we made the comparison. Another comparison we made that is really only going to resonate with our North American listeners is that the world international football is closer to what Major League Soccer football is as it is to great club football in Europe, because the team, the balance of power on the teams, the balance of skill in the teams is more diverse. And I think that when that plays out on a tactical side of things, in the way that when you have a great player on your team like a Messi, but you don't have quite the same level of talent surrounding him. I mean, Argentina does have some other quote unquote DPs on that team. Don't kid ourselves. But
yeah, I know. I was gonna make the DP joke too. Like Messi, Di Maria, and Aguero, the three DPs, and Higuain's like the TAM player. If you don't know what we're talking about soccer today, those are MLS terms, where a DP is a player's salary that doesn't count in your salary cap, and and all that. So this is kind of an inside joke for our MLS listeners.
But just like in MLS, the way that they will play a thing like that is you will try and isolate, you know, you will try and put all of your attention, double team them, basically. You will, you know, it happens at any level, but it's more effective when you don't have as much supporting cast around them. At the club level, like at Barcelona, you double team Messi and, well, someone else is going to kill you because they have 11 DPs on the pitch.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, they got 18 because there's 7 on the bench, too. They could come here and be DPs. All right, so France moving on. France 4, Argentina 3. I did like, though, just to finish on France, finish on the positive, France did win, right? So it's about how what France did and not Argentina. France did play a very beautiful game for the most part in their passing of the ball, moving the ball forward, and trying to find ways to get Mbappe influential. And one player we talked about early on in the show a few weeks ago is Paul Pogba and Antoine Griezmann. I was saying, as far as those two will go, France will go. What I have been interested and very fascinated by is Paul Pogba's defensive play and Paul Pogba's commitment to the team defensively, tracking back, box to box, being pretty much a six, literally, not just wearing it, being it. And that has been refreshing for me. A player that a lot of people don't like because he's extravagant, because he's himself, because he's not worried about just talking and being himself and having a bit of a fun. And I guess it does rub some generations the wrong way. But for me, Paul Pogba's commitment to the team and his willingness to not necessarily be the man to finish things, but to create and to find spaces and to sacrifice his statistics for the team, this has been interesting for me.
Sure, and you've got a lot of what France has going on is a lot of guys that could be superstars seem to be buying into a team concept. You know, the thing I'll say about France is that they're doing this so far. They're in the quarterfinals, and Griezmann really hasn't been that influential. He's got 2 penalty goals, and you would have expected a little bit more. Certainly, I expected a little bit more out of him. We both picked him for the Golden Boot winner, and he's not going to do that.
No. Even Giroud, well, you never know. A hat trick, and he's up there with Kane, so you never know what can happen.
Sure, yeah.
But Giroud as well. You know, those two strikers. And that's what is fascinating to me. And when you look at how France is set up, they're not set up necessarily to have Griezmann and Giroud finish all the time. Giroud can play the hold-up man, or you can have Griezmann trying to influential track back and create spots. And that wonder goal by Payet, we haven't talked about. The second right back, the alternate right back that is taken over for Sidibe, who hasn't played great in the last few games. And, of course, on the other side, Mendy was suspended, so you had another player. But for the right back, this chance that he had to tie the game when it was 2-1 Argentina after a great goal, this volley, this backspin volley, it reminded me of a Paul Pogba goal for Manchester United 2 years ago, where you just see the ball rotating, floating, and never goes down, just continues to rise, continue to edge its way to the top corner. In this case, it curved just a little, and the camera angle was so perfect. Right behind it, you see the effect on the ball, the rotation, the curve. Oh, that volley was spectacular.
It was, yeah. And look, that ball, too, is playing a role in all this. The way the physics of whatever that ball that they designed, and it's not the first time in a World Cup we're talking about the physics of the ball, because they always, I think, do something with it because they want to create goals. And certainly has created a lot of movement on this one, and it's been fun to watch. And that was another great goal in a World Cup that's been full of them. It's hard. Normally, it's pretty easy to pick the goal of the World Cup tournament. There's about 10 that are so far that you can make an argument for.
Yeah, and so far, Dwayne, there's been, before the knockout stage, there was 122 goals. Yesterday, there was 9 goals. So 131 goals so far in this year's World Cup, which is a record, obviously. Maybe the ball has something to do with it. And we kind of like the aspect of the ball, too. The black and white, and now it's red, black, and white for the knockout stage. And don't forget, the final, the ball will be gold and black. So that will be an interesting aspect, too. But, of course, they make this because they want to sell balls, and they can sell soccer balls now. And if you go to any soccer shop right now, there's those 3 balls that are being sold. So they're making money off those balls. But it is a spectacular way that this ball moves in the air, rotates, and the technique that the players use with that ball makes it very fascinating. And by the way, yesterday, there was a bit of a showmanship. Di Maria scored from 30.1 yard for the longest goal scored in this World Cup so far. Payet was like, hold my beer. 31.2 yards. And then Payet's got the longest goal scored in this World Cup.
All right. On that note, maybe segue. But I did a poll immediately following the game yesterday on my Twitter feed that just said simply, France is good, Argentina is bad. And it was 57% people thought that France won that game as opposed to Argentina losing that game, which is probably fair. We should always focus on the winners. Yep. Speaking of winners,
Uruguay.
Have we been sleeping on Uruguay?
I think we have, but I think it's because of 2014. And I think it's because of the unpredictability of a Luis Suarez and the lack of, I would say, proven record for a Cavani at that level with this squad. We all know what Cavani can do. We all seen what Cavani can do with PSG, especially when he has a Neymar coming next to him and being, I'll be the man. Cavani's like, wait, hold my beer once again, and I'll show you how to score goals. Just remember last year and a little dust up. But that header, 6 minutes in, that first of all, that Cavani pass to Suarez that was built by Cavani, and then Suarez recognizing the give and go play with Cavani literally putting to sleep two defenders of Portugal, finding ways to get behind him, 6 yards open. One of the most powerful headers I've ever seen. And it's 1-0 Uruguay, 6 minutes in.
Yeah, and what a game by Cavani. We'll talk about his injury in a minute for sure. But I thought that there was a fitting for a guy that you talk about sleeping on. And Cavani is a star, a global star that we sleep on too, because he hasn't, you know, he plays at PSG, he's played at Napoli before. Both of those are very good teams, but good teams that are kind of not always on our TV screens, particularly in this part of the world. So we don't necessarily see him in the same way.
And Cavani was never the guy. He was always a guy with another guy, right? If you go back to his Napoli days, well, it was Gonzalo Higuain there too, right? It was Gonzalo Higuain who was taking some advantage and taking the brunt of the goals before Higuain moved to Juve, and we all know the rest of the story. Now, when you look at that as well, Cavani's time with PSG, oh yeah, Cavani's the man, he's with Ibra. Oh wait, Ibra's gone. Oh, Neymar, yeah, Di Maria. So Cavani always was a great player, but no one gave him the keys to the car. This time around, he's taking it. And his second goal, that curling shot, that beautiful technique, open up the right foot, curling it to the far post in the small net. And it's 2-1 at that point. Portugal did get an equalizer earlier in this game. Even though this game finished a lot closer on the scoreboard, I did not feel Portugal was in that game that much as the score would indicate.
No, I mean, they got the early goal, as you say, Uruguay did, and seemed to control it for the most part. Portugal pulled the one, you know, Pepe got the goal in the second half, which was kind of surprising to me based on the flow of play. But and then Uruguay responded quite well, not to give you a play-by-play here, but we all saw it. But it certainly was a controlled performance by Uruguay, to the point that I was at this point going, you know, you look at this, France is not exactly going, oh, well, you know, wiping their hands. They're concerned. This is going to be a good matchup, and you can see those teams going through. But I do think that probably because Uruguay was drawn into that Group A, which was terrible, and we'll see today how terrible it was, I think, with the Spain-Russia game. We'll watch that in just not very long from now, but an hour from when we're recording. So by the time you're listening to this, maybe I sound like a fool, or maybe I sound like I am a very knowledgeable informant of the game. But
Depends, they were in a bad group, they weren't pushed,
they were forgotten. The first games too, when you play the first games, you kind of forget. Right. And by the time the group's ending, you're like all excited by other performances that happened. But Uruguay just quietly is winning. And they won again against a Portugal team that a lot of people had going pretty deep.
And the goal against Portugal was their first goal conceded in the 2018 World Cup. So it means that defensively they're there too. So because we don't necessarily know all the players that plays for Uruguay, some of them does play in places where we don't have necessarily access to their play. I guess we have been sleeping on a bit on Uruguay, but I have to toot my own horn. My predictions yesterday were both became true. I predicted France and predicted Uruguay. Yes, it's easy. It was the two favorites. And, you know, Dwayne, winners of the groups over the last few World Cup usually 85% of the time win in the round of 16. I think that's a stat that we and that's a stat we need to remember looking at the games today, tomorrow, and the day after.
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's based on the fact that there's always been a consistent top five, six in the world that are always usually at this stage, and they typically win these games. But and as we said, this is a much more wide open World Cup, so it'll be very interesting to see whether that kind of stat continues moving forward. Quickly, let's talk about the injury a little bit. I'm going to read you the quote that he did after the play, after the game. I mean, you always take stuff athletes or coaches or managers or anyone really associated with the team is saying with an injury about an injury with a grain of salt, because they're going to try and hide it, just like we saw with Moslaw, which I don't think he was ever totally fit in this tournament. And
he was trying to hide it, but we knew Mo. We see through you, Mo.
Yeah, this is what Cavani said after the game. I just felt something. This is translated, of course. I just felt something at one point and couldn't recover. I hope to be fit. I'll do everything to make sure I can to take the field with my teammates. It hurts a little bit, but we'll see how it looks tomorrow. And that's, you know, that's a kind of a vanilla quote, but he's saying, so, oh, it's possible, but they're not going to say that it's not possible. There's a lot of people that saw that and saw the way he was limping, and he's not going to pull himself out of a round of 16 game if he thinks he has anything to give. So that's a blow. It's a blow for sure, and it really puts a lot of pressure on, you know, we talked a minute ago with Messi about how you need multiple players. Well, if Suarez is the only guy, then, and Suarez hasn't really had a standout tournament by any means. I mean, maybe it's a standout tournament in the fact that we're not watching Luis Suarez and going, oh my God, what's he going to do next?
Because he didn't get a red card yet. So maybe that's a positive. Yeah. The guy didn't get sanctioned yet and suspended yet, so that's good. And no biting incident. So that's a positive.
Yeah. I mean, the jokes write themselves,
well,
right?
So, Italy's not here, right? So that kind of works itself too. Like, Chiellini's not here to get bitten, so maybe that's why.
Yeah. I'll say this about Luis Suarez. And look, very distinctly remember covering the 2014 season when Liverpool was trying to win a title and was almost single-handedly being dragged there by Suarez.
Suarez, yeah. And Sturridge.
You know, well, and then Steven Gerrard had a little mess up in midfield, and the
banana,
whole thing went sideways.
The banana peel slap.
Anyway, but the point I'm making about that is Luis Suarez gets, we always make the jokes about him. We make the, you know, he doesn't have the same bite as he did today, or, you know, he doesn't have the same kind of hunger today, or whatever. Aww. We make bite jokes because, well, he's bitten three people, and that's really weird. That's really weird. Really weird. So we make the jokes, but what we forget sometimes when we're making these jokes is just how damn good he is. And when he wants to play, he can play right there. In 2014, I made arguments on this show, I believe. I get my podcast mixed up, but yeah, summer podcast.
2014, we were doing the Two Solitude Soccer podcast. It was on the ancestor of the show, pretty much.
Yes, there you go. So I made arguments at the time that Suarez should be considered for Ballon d'Or, that he should have been in the consideration for player of the year with Ronaldo and Messi based on what he was doing for Liverpool. He can be that good. So that's another reason why we're kind of sleeping on this team. You know, we can make the ha ha ha, he might bite someone jokes, and he might, because he has, but if he's playing, when he is on, when he is moving, when he's Mosala when he gets going, right? Like, he has that same capability. So, it's doubly dangerous if he's got a Cavani beside him, but I don't think Uruguay can win this World Cup if Cavani is seriously hurt, and that's unfortunate because they were very intriguing up until he went off the field with Cristiano Ronaldo with his arm around him helping his buddy.
Okay,
or first trying to hurry the game up.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was thinking. You know, people are like, oh, look at Ronaldo. He's so nice. He's so thoughtful. He's reassuring Cavani by bringing him to the sideline. I'm like, nah. No. It's not what's happening. Ronaldo's saying, get the F off my pitch. I'm going to help you, and you're going to walk faster because I'm going to carry you, and then I'm going to take the ball. I'm going to try to go score. That's exactly what happened. It had nothing to do with Ronaldo trying to be nice to Cavani. It was Ronaldo thinking, Cavani, get off my lawn.
Exactly. Which, you know, but the images are going to be set around the world. That also could have been part of it. But Ronaldo is a very—he's
smart,
very,
man. He's a branding machine. Like, he's a marketing, branding, clothing machine. Just walking.
Yeah, he couldn't just, you know, pick him up and throw him off the pitch like he probably wanted to do. But if he put his arm around him, he's going, not only is this going to hurry the game up, but I'm also going to get the image of me together, and then we can make a poster and we can make money together. That might have been what he was saying.
Oh, geez.
We're going to get the rights for this, and we're going to sell it. We're going to sell this around the world.
Not just that,
maybe
Dwayne.
We're getting a bit too thin.
Wait. Here's a storyline. Remember Ronaldo 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, Champions League final? Oh, my future is in doubt. Maybe Ronaldo's on his way to Paris. And he'd be like, oh, the friends are reuniting in Paris. And you see the image of Ronaldo taking Cavani off the pitch. And then, like, together, walking towards the Eiffel Tower. Like, oh, we are Paris. You know?
Yeah, we are Paris. Yeah, no. Je suis Paris. That's I am, anyway. Remember, that's not how Dwayne speaks French today. That's another possibility as well. But nonetheless, as I said, I mean, I think that's a simplistic evaluation of Uruguay's chances, but I think it's a pretty accurate one. That French team is pretty stacked in that quarterfinal if they don't have, you know, two guys that are dangerous. But the one thing I will say about Uruguay that does give them a chance in any game is you look at that back line, the two Atleti defenders side by each, having two guys that play year-round on the same club team and a club team that is known for its defensive tenacity. And we saw a little bit of that during the game. That is kind of maybe bumps up the overall talent level a little bit because of that familiarity.
The chemistry, yeah.
So that Atleti center-back combination is, I think, something that we're not talking about enough. Two guys that play on maybe the best defensive team in the world that are at the back for Uruguay. So you could make the argument. They only allowed the one goal, as you say, in this World Cup. We thought that might have been because of the group, but it could also because they're amongst the better defensive teams in the tournament. And that's, I think, is how they beat France, is that they sit back and they defend. They beat France the same way, you know, they treat it as if they're Atletico Madrid and that the team across the pitch is Real Madrid and they've got to knock down the stars because it's, you know, on paper, there's more talent on the one side, but
yeah. Well, you still have to catch Mbappe, and that will be the difficult task, right? Is to make sure that, you know, I was talking to a colleague last night. Montreal and Impact were playing. Montreal won 2-0 yesterday against one of the best team in Major League Soccer. So I was there, and we were talking about the Mbappe goal. And I was talking to someone who's working for FIFA during the day, and he's working for the FIFA.com. So he's doing the French blog. So he's doing the French blog, and he's okay. So he's putting his head down, writing, and then he say, "Oh, Mbappe is going for a run." Okay, and then he hears penalties. Like, "Oh, so I guess Mbappe ran into Mascherano." Like, "Nope, it wasn't Mascherano. It was a defender behind him. That's how fast Mbappe was going." He's like, "Jeez." Anyways, but yeah, you never know. But if you look at the back line again, they nullified Cristiano Ronaldo yesterday. Ronaldo was a non-factor in this game. He had one of his worst game for Portugal in a knockout stage of a World Cup, which is usually that's where he's having a terrible game. And we've seen it in the instance yesterday where Ronaldo did not find time, just like Messi, to be influential. And I guess this tells us a lot about Uruguay's defense and France's defense in a way. Even though they conceded three, they didn't concede the one that would have been costly. And it's the same for Uruguay. They only won by one goal, too. So, no, it will be a fascinating game. And stylistically speaking, this France-Uruguay game can be even more enjoyable to watch than France-Argentina yesterday morning.
Perhaps, yeah. Well, yeah, it's a good game. Like, that's, you know, again, I'd sleep on Uruguay. It's not a team that a lot of – it's not – it is a traditional power in the sense that it was a traditional power in 1930, but it's more of an emerging power in people's minds now that have been watching the game modernly. So we don't think of them in the same way as we think of a Brazil and what have you. But it's a very, very strong team with a very strong history of the sport in that country and a very strong like passion to play for that national team strip. So it's no team to sniff at. And France is, you know, I think France is a favorite in that matchup. But I don't think that that it's a sure thing one way or another, particularly if Cavani really isn't, you know, is able to go at full strength. And as I said a minute ago, based on the way he went off, I'm not entirely sure he would. In fact, if I'm PSG, I'm a little concerned too, based on the way he went off. And that season's, you know, the Champions League started already. Did you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, like the third round of qualification, like clubs that I've never heard before played. Yeah, I know.
I know, but Andorra deserves a chance too. They have champions as well.
They have champions, yes. They have a league, yes. Everyone's got a league except us. Canadian Premier League. 2019.
Almost soon. Almost.
We're getting there. That's a little inside joke as well. If you don't know, Dwayne and I, usually World Cup Today is called Soccer Today, Monday to Friday, 10 a.m., where Dwayne and I talk about the world of football with a soccer perspective. And speaking of the world of football, we'll be back tomorrow at the same time, 8:30 a.m., with our review of Spain, Russia, and Croatia, Denmark. Yesterday, we had interesting games. I kind of have a feeling we might be in for blowouts today.
Maybe, maybe. And I should, we are in Canada, so happy Canada Day to everyone listening outside of the province of Quebec. And if you're in Quebec,
happy Canada Day too. Like, we're happy moving day. Yeah, first of all, how can you move at 42 degrees Celsius? I have no idea. And why would you move at the same time as everybody else? Streets are narrow, trucks are wide. Doesn't make sense, but cheers.
Well, you know why that's today, but anyway, we'll leave that well enough alone.
Oh, it's an old it's an old tradition, apparently, that goes back 400 years ago, but yep.
Yeah, they could easily make a change there, couldn't they?
Exactly.
Anyway, happy Canada Day to anyone who's enjoying it. The fireworks will fly here. Well, TFC plays tonight as well, so we'll see the fireworks by the stadium probably, and enjoy the game. Stay out of the heat. It's going to be stupid hot today in this part of the world, but we're talking to the whole world, and the World Cup continues on, and we'll be back tomorrow to talk about it, Kevin. And on that note, I'm going to shut up and let you say goodbye.
As always, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute and myself at Kev Larame, the show at Soccer Today SPN. Get your clothing inspired by greatness at sportsinspired.ca. We have a World Cup inspired collection that's available for a limited time only, and you have a 15% discount right now with your first order if you go to sportsinspired.ca. And as always, we'll be back tomorrow. You can subscribe to our YouTube page to make sure you catch all our live show. Make sure you click on the notification bell and turn on all notifications to make sure you get the notice when we go live, which is daily until July 15th. And then it's Soccer Today, so make sure you subscribe to make sure you catch our regular show when we talk about the world of football with a soccer perspective. And as always, we'll be back tomorrow. Have a great soccer.